Chapter 6 The King of the Golden Hall. They rode on through sunset and slow dusk and gathering night. When at last they halted and dismounted, even Aragorn was stiff and weary. Gandalf only allowed them a few hours' rest. Legolas and Gimli slept, and Aragorn lay flat, stretched upon his back, but Gandalf stood, leaning on his staff, gazing into the darkness east and west. All was silent, and there was no sign or sound of living thing. The night was barred with long clouds, fleeting on a chill wind, when they arose again. Under the cold moon they went on once more, as swift as by the light of day. Hours passed, and still they rode on. Gimli nodded and would have fallen from his seat, if Gandalf had not clutched and shaken him. Hazufel and Arod, weary but proud, followed their tireless leader, a grey shadow before them hardly to be seen. The miles went by. The waxing moon sank into the cloudy west. A bitter chill came into the air. Slowly in the east the dark faded to a cold grey. Red shafts of light leapt above the black walls of the Emyn Muil, far away upon their left. Dawn came clear and bright. A wind swept across their path, rushing through the bent grasses. Suddenly Shadowfax stood still and neighed. Gandalf pointed ahead. "Look!" he cried, and they lifted their tired eyes. Before them stood the mountains of the south, white-tipped and streaked with black. The grasslands rolled against the hills that clustered at their feet, and flowed up into many valleys still dim and dark, untouched by the light of dawn, winding their way into the heart of the great mountains. Immediately before the travellers, the widest of these glens opened like a long gulf amid the hills. Far inward they glimpsed a tumbled mountain mass with one tall peak. At the mouth of the vale there stood like a sentinel a lonely height. About its feet there flowed, as a thread of silver, the stream that issued from the dale. Upon its brow they caught, still far away, a glint in the rising sun, a glimmer of gold.
"Speak, Legolas," said Gandalf. "Tell us what you see there before us."
Legolas gazed ahead, shading his eyes from the level shafts of the new-risen sun. "I see a white stream that comes down from the snows," he said. "Where it issues from the shadow of the vale, a green hill rises upon the east. A dyke and mighty wall and thorny fence encircle it. Within there rise the roofs of houses, and in the midst, set upon a green terrace, there stands aloft a great hall of men. And it seems to my eyes that it is thatched with gold. The light of it shines far over the land. Golden, too, are the posts of its doors. There men in bright mail stand, but all else within the courts are yet asleep."
"Edoras, those courts are called," said Gandalf, "and Meduseld is that golden hall. There dwells Theoden, son of Thingol, king of the Mark of Rohan. We are come with the rising of the day. Now the road lies plain to see before us. But we must ride more warily, for war is abroad, and the Rohirrim, the horse lords, do not sleep, even if it seems so from afar. Draw no weapon, speak no haughty word, I counsel you all, until we are come before Theoden's seat."
The morning was bright and clear about them, and birds were singing when the travellers came to the stream. It ran down swiftly into the plain, and beyond the feet of the hills, turned across their path in a wide bend, flowing away east to feed the Entwash far off in its reed-choked beds. The land was green. In the wet meads and along the grassy borders of the stream grew many willow trees. Already in this southern land they were blushing red at their fingertips, feeling the approach of spring. Over the stream there was a ford between low banks much trampled by the passage of horses. The travellers passed over and came upon a wide rutted track leading towards the uplands. At the foot of the walled hill the way ran under the shadow of many mounds, high and green. Upon their western sides the grass was white as with a drifted snow, small flowers sprang there like countless stars amid the turf.
"Look," said Gandalf, "how fair are the bright eyes in the grass. Ever mind they are called, Simbelmune in this land of men, for they blossom in all the seasons of the year, and grow where dead men rest. Behold, we are come to the great barrows where the sires of Theoden sleep."
7 mounds upon the left, and 9 upon the right, said Aragorn.
Many long lives of men it is since the Golden Hall was built.
500 times have the red leaves fallen in Mirkwood in my home since then, said Legolas, and but a little while does that seem to us.
But to the riders of the Mark it seems so long ago,
said Aragorn, that the raising of this house is but a memory of song, and the years before are lost in the mist of time. Now they call this land their home, their own, and their speech is sundered from their northern kin. Then he began to chant softly in a slow tongue unknown to the elf and dwarf, yet they listened, for there was a strong music in it. "That, I guess, is the language of the Rohirrim," said Legolas, "for it is like to this land itself, rich and rolling in part, and else hard and stern as the mountains. But I cannot guess what it means, save that it is laden with the sadness of mortal speech."
"It runs thus in the common speech," said Aragorn, "as near as I can make it. Where now the horse and the rider? Where is the horn that was blowing? Where is the helm and the hauberk and the bright hair flowing? Where is the hand on the harp-string and the red fire glowing? Where is the spring and the harvest and the tall corn growing? They have passed like rain on the mountain, like a wind in the meadow. The days have gone down in the west behind the hills into shadow. Who shall gather the smoke of the dead wood burning, or behold the flowing years from the sea returning?" Thus spoke a forgotten poet long ago in Rohan, recalling how tall and fair was Eorl the Young, who rode down out of the north, and there were wings upon the feet of his steed. Fellarof, father of horses, so men still sing in the evening. With these words the travellers passed the silent mounds. Following the winding way up the green shoulders of the hills, they came at last to the wide wind-swept walls and the gates of Edoras. There sat many men in bright mail, who sprang at once to their feet and barred the way with spears. "Stay, strangers here unknown," they cried in the tongue of the Riddermark, demanding the names and errand of the strangers.
Wonder was in their eyes, but little friendliness, as they looked darkly upon Gandalf.
"Well do I understand your speech," he answered in the same language. "Yet few strangers do so. Why then do you not speak in the common tongue, as is the custom in the West, if you wish to be answered?"
"It is the will of Theoden King that none should enter his gates, save those who know our tongue and are our friends," replied one of the guards.
"None are welcome here in days of war but our own folk, and those that come from Mundborg in the land of Gondor. Who are you that come heedless over the plains, thus strangely clad, riding horses like to our own horses? Long have we kept guard here, and we have watched you from afar. Never have we seen other riders so strange, nor any horse more proud than is one of these that bear you. He is one of the Meara's, unless our eyes are cheated by some spell. Say, are you not a wizard? Some spy from Saruman, or phantoms of his craft? Speak now, and be swift."
"We are no phantoms," said Aragorn, "nor do your eyes cheat you. For indeed, these are your own horses that we ride, as you knew well ere you asked, I guess. But seldom does thief ride home to the stable. Here are Hasufel and Arod, that Eomer, the third marshal of the Mark, lent to us only 2 days ago. We bring them back now, even as we promised him. Has not Eomer then returned and given warning of our coming?" A troubled look came into the guard's eyes.
"Of Eomer I have naught to say," he answered. "If what you tell me is truth, then doubtless Theoden will have heard of it. Maybe your coming was not wholly unlooked for. It's but 2 nights ago that Wormtongue came to us, and said that by the will of Theoden no stranger should pass these gates."
"Wormtongue," said Gandalf, looking sharply at the guard. "Say no more. My errand is not to Wormtongue, but to the Lord of the Mark himself. I am in haste. Will you not go or send to say that we are come?"
His eyes glinted under his deep brows as he bent his gaze upon the man.
"Yes, I will go," he answered slowly. "But what name shall I report? And what shall I say of you? Old and weary you seem now, and yet you are fell and grim beneath, I deem." "Well do you see and speak," said the wizard, "for I am Gandalf. I have returned, and behold, I too bring back a horse. Here is Shadowfax the Great, whom no other hand can tame, and here beside me is Aragorn, son of Arathorn, the heir of kings, and it is to Mundberg that he goes. Here also are Legolas the elf and Gimli the dwarf, our comrades. Go now and say to your master that we are at his gates, and would have speech with him, if he will permit us to come into his hall." "Strange names you give indeed, but I will report them as you bid, and learn my master's will," said the guard. "Wait here a little while, and I will bring you such answer as seems good to him. Do not hope too much. These are dark days."
He went swiftly away, leaving the strangers in the watchful keeping of his comrades. After some time he returned.
"Follow me,"
he said. "Theoden gives you leave to enter, but any weapon that you bear, be it only a staff, you must leave on the threshold. The door wardens will keep them." The dark gates were swung open. The travellers entered, walking in file behind their guide. They found a broad path, paved with hewn stones, now winding upward, now climbing in short flights of well-laid steps. Many houses built of wood and many dark doors they passed. Beside the way, in a stone channel, a stream of clear water flowed, sparkling and chattering. At length they came to the crown of the hill. There stood a high platform upon a green terrace, at the foot of which a bright spring gushed from a stone carved in the likeness of a horse's head. Beneath was a wide basin from which the water spilled and fed the falling stream. Up the green terrace went a stair of stone, high and broad, and on either side of the topmost step were stone-hewn seats. There sat other guards, with drawn swords laid upon their knees. Their golden hair was braided on their shoulders. The sun was blazoned upon their green shields, their long corsets were burnished bright, and when they rose, taller they seemed than mortal men.
"There are the doors before you," said the guide. "I must return now to my duty at the gate. Farewell, and may the Lord of the Mark be gracious to you."
He turned and went swiftly back down the road. The others climbed the long stair under the eyes of the tall watchman. Silent they stood now above and spoke no word, until Gandalf stepped out upon the paved terrace at the stair's head. Then suddenly, with clear voices, they spoke a courteous greeting in their own tongue.
"Hail, comers from afar," they said,
and they turned the hilts of their swords toward the travellers in token of peace. Green gems flashed in the sunlight. Then one of the guards stepped forward and spoke in the common speech.
"I am the door-ward of Theoden," he said. "Hama is my name. Here I must bid you lay aside your weapons before you enter."
Then Legolas gave into his hand his silver-hafted knife, his quiver, and his bow. "Keep these well," he said, "for they come from the Golden Wood, and the Lady of Lothlorien gave them to me." Wonder came into the man's eyes, and he laid the weapons hastily by the wall, as if he feared to handle them.
"No man will touch them, I promise you," he said.
Aragorn stood a while hesitating.
"It is not my will," he said, "to put aside my sword, or to deliver Andúril to the hand of any other man."
"It is the will of Theoden,"
said Hama.
"It is not clear to me that the will of Theoden, son of Thingol, even though he be Lord of the Mark, should prevail over the will of Aragorn, son of Arathorn, Elendil's heir of Gondor."
"This is the house of Theoden, not of Aragorn, even were he king of Gondor in the seat of Denethor," said Hama,
stepping swiftly before the doors and barring the way. His sword was now in his hand, and the point toward the strangers.
"This is idle talk," said Gandalf. "Needless is Theoden's demand, but it is useless to refuse.
A king will have his way in his own hall, be it folly or wisdom.
Truly,
said Aragorn, and I would do as the master of the house bade me, were this only a woodman's cot, if I bore now any sword but Andúril.
Whatever its name may be, said Harmar, here you shall lay it, if you would not fight alone against all the men in Edoras.
Not alone,
said Gimli, fingering the blade of his axe, and looking darkly up at the guard, as if he were a young tree that Gimli had a mind to fell.
Not alone.
Come, come, said Gandalf. We're all friends here, or should be, for the laughter of Mordor will be our only reward if we quarrel. My errand is pressing. Here at least is my sword, good man Harmar. Keep it well. Glamdring it is called, for the elves made it long ago. Now let me pass. Come, Aragorn. Slowly Aragorn unbuckled his belt, and himself set his sword upright against the wall.
Here I set it, he said, but I command you not to touch it, nor to permit any other to lay hand on it. In this elvish sheath dwells the blade that was broken, and has been made again. Telhar first wrought it in the deeps of time.
Death shall come to any man that draws Elendil's sword, save Elendil's heir. The guard stepped back and looked with amazement on Aragorn.
"It seems that you have come on the wings of song out of the forgotten days," he said. "It shall be, Lord, as you command."
"Well," said Gimli, "if it has Andúril to keep it company, my axe may stay here too, without shame."
And he laid it on the floor.
"Now then, if all is as you wish, let us go and speak with your master."
The guard still hesitated.
"Your staff," he said to Gandalf, "forgive me, but that too must be left at the doors."
"Foolishness," said Gandalf. "Prudence is one thing, but discourtesy is another. I am old. If I may not lean on my stick as I go, then I will sit out here until it pleases Théoden to hobble out himself to speak with me."
Aragorn laughed. "Every man has something too dear to trust to another, but would you part an old man from his support? Come, will you not let us enter?"
"The staff in the hand of a wizard may be more than a prop for age,"
said Harmar. He looked hard at the ash staff on which Gandalf leaned.
"Yet in doubt a man of worth will trust to his own wisdom. I believe you are friends and folk worthy of honour who have no evil purpose. You may go in."
The guards now lifted the heavy bars of the doors and swung them slowly inwards, grumbling on their great hinges. The travellers entered. Inside it seemed dark and warm after the clear air upon the hill. The hall was long and wide and filled with shadows and half-lights. Mighty pillars upheld its lofty roof, but here and there bright sunbeams fell in glimmering shafts from the eastern windows high under the deep eaves. Through the louver in the roof, above the thin wisps of issuing smoke, the sky showed pale and blue. As their eyes changed, the travellers perceived that the floor was paved with stones of many hues, branching runes and strange devices intertwined beneath their feet. They saw now that the pillars were richly carved, gleaming dully with gold and half-seen colours. Many woven cloths were hung upon the walls, and over their wide spaces marched figures of ancient legend, some dim with years, some darkling in the shade. But upon one form the sunlight fell, a young man upon a white horse. He was blowing a great horn, and his yellow hair was flying in the wind. The horse's head was lifted, and its nostrils were wide and red as it neighed, smelling battle afar. Foaming water, green and white, rushed and curled about its knees.
"Behold, Eorl the Young," said Aragorn. "Thus he rode out of the north to the battle of the field of Celebrant."
Now the four companions went forward, past the clear wood fire burning upon the long hearth in the midst of the hall. Then they halted. At the far end of the house, beyond the hearth and facing north towards the doors, was a dais with three steps, and in the middle of the dais was a great gilded chair. Upon it sat a man so bent with age that he seemed almost a dwarf. But his white hair was long and thick and fell in great braids,
from beneath a thin golden circlet set upon his brow. In the centre upon his forehead shone a single white diamond. His beard was laid like snow upon his knees, but his eyes still burned with a bright light, glinting as he gazed at the strangers. Behind his chair stood a woman clad in white. At his feet upon the steps sat a wizened figure of a man with a pale, wise face and heavy-lidded eyes. There was a silence. The old man did not move in his chair. At length Gandalf spoke.
"Hail, Theoden, son of Thingil! I have returned, for behold, the storm comes, and now all friends should gather together, lest each singly be destroyed."
Slowly the old man rose to his feet, leaning heavily upon a short black staff with a handle of white bone. And now the stranger saw that, bent though he was tall and must in youth have been high and proud indeed.
"I greet you," he said, "and maybe you look for welcome. But truth to tell, your welcome is doubtful here, Master Gandalf. You've ever been a herald of woe. Troubles follow you like crows, and ever the oftener the worse. I will not deceive you. When I heard that Shadowfax had come back riderless, I rejoiced at the return of the horse, but still more at the lack of the rider. And when Erma brought the tidings that you had gone at last to your long home, I did not mourn. But news from afar is seldom sooth. Here you come again. And with you come evils worse than before, as might be expected. Why should I welcome you? Gandalf Stormcrow, tell me that."
Slowly he sat down again in his chair.
"You speak justly, lord," said the pale man, sitting upon the steps of the dais. "It is not yet 5 days since the bitter tidings came that Theodred, your son, was slain upon the West Marches. Your right hand, second marshal of the Mark. In Erma there is little trust. Few men would be left to guard your walls, if he had been allowed to rule. And even now we learn from Gondor that the Dark Lord is stirring in the east. Such is the hour in which this wanderer chooses to return. Why, indeed, should we welcome you, Master Stormcrow? Lothspell, I name you. Ill news. And ill news is an ill guest, they say." He laughed grimly, as he lifted his heavy lids for a moment and gazed on the strangers with dark eyes. "You are held wise, my friend Wormtongue, and are doubtless a great support to your master," answered Gandalf in a soft voice. "Yet in 2 ways may a man come with evil tidings. He may be a worker of evil, or he may be such as leaves well alone, and comes only to bring aid in time of need."
"That is so," said Wormtongue, "but there is a third kind. Pickers of bones, meddlers in other men's sorrows, carrion fowl that grow fat on war. What aid have you ever brought, Stormcrow? And what aid do you bring now? It was aid from us that you sought last time that you were here. Then my lord bade you choose any horse that you would and begone, and to the wonder of all you took Shadowfax in your insolence. My lord was sorely grieved, yet to some it seemed that to speed you from the land the price was not too great. I guess that it is likely to turn out the same once more. You will seek aid rather than render it. Do you bring men? Do you bring horses, swords, spears? That I would call aid. That is our present need. But who are these that follow at your tail? 3 ragged wanderers in grey, and you yourself the most beggar-like of the four.
The courtesy of your hall is somewhat lessened of late, Theoden, son of Thingil, said Gandalf. Has not the messenger from your gate reported the names of my companions? Seldom has any lord of Rohan received 3 such guests. Weapons they have laid at your doors that are worth many a mortal man, even the mightiest. Grey is their raiment, for the elves clad them, and thus they have passed through the shadows of great perils to your hall.
Then it is true, as Eomer reported, that you are in league with the sorceress of the Golden Wood, said Wormtongue. It is not to be wondered at. Webs of deceit were ever woven in Dwemordine.
Gimli strode a pace forward, but felt suddenly the hand of Gandalf clutch him by the shoulder, and he halted, standing stiff as stone.
In Dwemordine, in Lorien, seldom have walked the feet of men. Few mortal eyes have seen the light that lies there ever long and bright. Galadriel, Galadriel, clear is the water of your well. White is the star in your white hand, unmarred, unstained is leaf and land. In Dwym or Dean, in Lorien, more fair than thoughts of mortal men.
Thus Gandalf softly sang, and then suddenly he changed. Casting his tattered cloak aside, he stood up and leaned no longer on his staff, and he spoke in a clear, cold voice.
The wise speak only of what they know, Grima, son of Galmord. A witless worm have you become. Therefore be silent, and keep your forked tongue behind your teeth. I have not passed through fire and death to bandy crooked words with a serving man till the lightning falls. He raised his staff. There was a roll of thunder. The sunlight was blotted out from the eastern windows. The whole hall became suddenly dark as night. The fire faded to sullen embers. Only Gandalf could be seen, standing white and tall before the blackened hearth. In the gloom they heard the hiss of Wormtongue's voice.
Did I not counsel you, Lord, to forbid his staff? That fool Harmer has betrayed us.
There was a flash as if lightning had cloven the roof. Then all was silent. Wormtongue sprawled on his face.
"Now, Theoden, son of Thingol, will you hearken to me?" said Gandalf. "Do you ask for help?"
He lifted his staff and pointed to a high window. There the darkness seemed to clear, and through the opening could be seen, high and far, a patch of shining sky.
"Not all is dark. Take courage, Lord of the Mark, for better help you will not find. No counsel have I to give to those that despair, yet counsel I could give, and words I could speak to you. Will you hear them? They are not for all ears. I bid you come out before your doors and look abroad. Too long have you sat in shadows and trusted to twisted tales and crooked promptings."
Slowly Theoden left his chair. A faint light grew in the hall again. The woman hastened to the king's side, taking his arm. And with faltering steps the old man came down from the dais and paced softly through the hall. Wormtongue remained lying on the floor. They came to the doors, and Gandalf knocked.
"Open!" he cried. "The Lord of the Mark comes forth!"
The doors rolled back, and a keen air came whistling in. A wind was blowing on the hills.
"Send your guards down to the stairs' foot," said Gandalf. "And you, lady, leave him a while with me. I will care for him."
"Go, Eowyn, sister-daughter," said the old king. "The time for fear is past." The woman turned and went slowly into the house. As she passed the doors she turned and looked back. Grave and thoughtful was her glance, as she looked on the king with cool pity in her eyes. Very fair was her face, and her long hair was like a river of gold. Slender and tall she was in her white robe girt with silver, but strong she seemed and stern as steel, a daughter of kings. Thus Aragorn, for the first time in the full light of day, beheld Eowyn, Lady of Rohan, and thought her fair, fair and cold, like a morning of pale spring that is not yet come to womanhood. And she now was suddenly aware of him, tall heir of kings, wise with many winters, grey-cloaked, hiding a power that yet she felt. For a moment still as stone she stood, then turning swiftly she was gone.